Hi, I'm Kristen Bell. Carvana makes car buying easy. Isn't that right, hun? Dax? Dax?
Sorry, did you know about this 7-day money-back guarantee?
A week to evaluate seat comfiness, you say?
A week of terrain tests? Yeah, I can test the brake pad resistance at variable speeds.
Make sure all the kids' stuff fits nicely.
Make sure our stuff fits nicely.
Oh, the...
Right. Still need to buy the car. Getting ahead of ourselves here.
Buy your car with Carvana today.
This is a True Crime in Real Time update from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.
It ended with a gavel, not a goodbye. On March 20th, 2025, a Utah judge quietly signed off on the final piece of a family that had already shattered in full public view. Kevin Frankie was officially divorced from Ruby Frankie, former momfluencer, now a convicted felon serving a sentence of up to 60 years in prison for child abuse. There was no press conference, no courtroom theatrics, just a signature and a final irreversible line drawn through a 23-year marriage. The legal system was catching up to what had long since collapsed behind closed doors. Now, on paper, the division was clean. Kevin got the house, the kids, and the responsibility. Ruby got, well, 4 consecutive prison terms and a storage unit key delivered to her parents. Technically, she also got to keep the $85,000 she had withdrawn from the family's accounts before she was arrested. But in the grand scheme of things, that might be the only thing left with her name on it. No alimony, no child support, no visitation. Just silence and state time. But clean on paper doesn't mean clean in reality. Let's rewind for a second. Because when you zoom in on the specifics of that divorce settlement, filed just a couple of weeks earlier on March 3rd, you see a legal system scrambling to sweep up the pieces of something that had been rotting in plain sight for years. Ruby was in prison. Her public image was in ashes. And Kevin? Kevin was left to rebuild what was left of their family. One court hearing, one therapy session, one whispered apology at a time. In terms of custody, there wasn't much to debate. Kevin was awarded full legal and physical custody of the 4 remaining minor children. Their 2 oldest, Sherry and Chad, were already adults and had been publicly estranged from their mother even before the arrest. But the younger 4, the ones caught in the worst of it, they were now officially under Kevin's care, just as they had been unofficially since the day Ruby and her business partner, Jody Hildebrandt, were led away in handcuffs. That part of the story, Ruby's arrest, is where things begin to unfold like a slow-moving nightmare. August 30th, 2023. A 12-year-old boy, gaunt and injured, climbs out of a window in Ivins, Utah, barefoot and desperate, and stumbles into a neighbor's home asking for food and water. He's covered in open wounds and duct tape. He tells them he escaped from the house next door, where he'd been tied up with rope. The neighbor sees the bruises, the filth, the hunger, and calls 911 without hesitation. First responders show up and find not just the boy, but also his 10-year-old sister. Both are visibly malnourished. The boy's injuries are described by officers as life-threatening. The girl isn't far behind. They're removed from the home and rushed to the hospital. That house belongs to Jody Hildebrandt. But their mother, Ruby, is there too. She's not just visiting. She's been staying there, off and on, for months. Police don't hesitate. Ruby and Jody are both arrested that same day, each booked on 6 counts of aggravated child abuse. The news rockets through social media within hours. For those who knew Ruby Frankie as the YouTube mom from 8 Passengers, it's whiplash. For others, especially those who'd been sounding the alarm for years, it's more like a horrific I told you so. That same night, 300 miles away, Kevin Frankie hears the news like everyone else, through the media. His kids are in the hospital. His estranged wife is in jail. His name is being floated as another possible suspect. Within hours, he drives down to Ivins and walks into the police department, asking to see his children. Instead, he gets interrogated. To be fair, investigators had to ask the obvious question. What did Kevin know and when did he know it? What followed was a 45-minute body cam recorded interview that shows a man in visible shock. When detectives tell Kevin about the condition of his kids, how his son was found tied up, starving, with open wounds, Kevin groans, covers his face, and says, "It sounds like a horror movie." He tells them, point blank, I haven't seen my kids in over a year. He says he trusted his wife. He says he thought she was doing what was best. He says he didn't know. That statement raised a lot of eyebrows at the time. A father not having seen his own children in over a year? But the story, as it turns out, was true, at least factually. Kevin had been cut off from the kids by Ruby herself back in July of 2022. She had told him under the advice of Jody Hildebrandt that his presence was toxic, that he needed to move out, that he needed to get right with himself. And Kevin had agreed, maybe reluctantly, maybe confused. But he left. And when he did, Ruby told him that part of the healing process meant absolutely no contact with the children. He obeyed. He honored it. He said later that he believed giving Ruby space would help the family, that she'd return to him and to normalcy, that this was temporary. But it wasn't. Instead, while Kevin stayed at his parents' home in Springville and kept paying the bills, Ruby went deeper into the connections rabbit hole, immersing herself in Jody's truth-based parenting ideology and bringing the younger children along for the ride. Behind the scenes, abuse escalated. Isolation became control. Control turned into cruelty. Now, by the time of that police interview in August 2023, Kevin's emotional state was complicated. He defended Ruby at first, said he still loved her, said he believed she wouldn't hurt the kids. But as investigators laid out the details, photos, statements, medical reports, his trust cracked. You can watch the moment on video when realization sets in. It's slow, painful, and humiliating, but it's real. And to their credit, police didn't stop at shock and sympathy. They checked his story. They dug into phone records, financials, location data. They confirmed that Kevin had truly been absent, emotionally, physically, geographically, for over a year. That his kids had been in Ruby's sole custody, with no formal custody order, just a private verbal arrangement. Ultimately, they found no grounds to charge him. Kevin Franke was never a suspect beyond day one. After that, the focus shifted. With Ruby in jail, someone had to step in. The kids, especially the four minors, were immediately placed into protective custody under Utah's Division of Child and Family Services. But within days, Kevin stepped forward. He filed for emergency custody. He began attending court hearings. He started the long process of parenting again, this time as a single father, now facing both media scrutiny and the emotional fallout of the abuse his children had suffered. It was in November 2023 that Kevin filed for divorce. Not out of haste, but maybe out of necessity. There was nothing left to salvage. The petition cited irreconcilable differences, but that phrase doesn't quite capture the crater left behind by what had happened. He also filed a domestic relations injunction, effectively barring Ruby from contacting him or the children during the proceedings. That injunction was later supported by a juvenile court ruling, one that made it clear Ruby Franke was not to have contact with her kids under any circumstances. In court, Kevin didn't demand retribution. He didn't pursue alimony. He didn't even seek repayment for child support. In fact, he waived it entirely, saying any support Ruby owed would be considered already paid, which might sound generous, but it also hints at something deeper. Maybe he just wanted it done. The divorce, when finalized, reflected a full transfer of responsibility and a complete legal severance. Kevin kept the Springville home, where the children now live. He was also awarded the family's vacation property in Schofield. He took on full parental rights, with Ruby stripped of all custody or decision-making authority. As for shared assets, most were absorbed under Kevin's name. Ruby, currently in prison, retained a few personal items, her portion of a storage unit, and digital copies of family photo archives. That's it. And here's the part that's both eerie and poetic. Despite everything, despite the charges, the conviction, the very public downfall, Ruby Franke kept the name Franke. Legally, she's still Ruby Franke. Maybe she'll change it later, maybe not. For now, she sits in a Utah correctional facility, serving her minimum 4-year term and awaiting parole review that may not come for decades. Kevin, meanwhile, is trying to help his children pick up the pieces. He's appeared in interviews, controlled, cautious, emotional. He's admitted failure, regret. He's accepted the hard truth that while he didn't cause the abuse, His absence gave it space to grow, and that's a guilt he'll likely carry forever. The children, especially the youngest, are in therapy. There's a long road ahead, but they're out. They're home. And for the first time in a long time, they're under the care of someone who, however late, showed up. The legal chapters are closed, the court has ruled, the documents are signed. But what happened behind those walls, what led to this unraveling, didn't start with a boy escaping from a window or a divorce decree being signed. That part of the story began much earlier, during a slow descent into ideology, isolation, and silence. That's where we're going next. It's easy to look at the end of a story and think everything before it must have been loud. Screaming kids, slammed doors, red flags flapping in the wind. But the truth is, this part of the Frankie story was quiet. Methodical. It didn't explode all at once. It decayed. Slowly. Behind walls and within relationships that were built on trust, obedience, and the idea that suffering might actually be salvation if you just squint hard enough. By 2021, Ruby Frankie was no longer just a strict mom with a YouTube channel. She was transitioning into something else entirely, something more intense, more zealous. She was aligning herself with a belief system that didn't just raise eyebrows, it terrified people who saw it up close. Enter Jody Hildebrandt. Licensed therapist, excommunicated Mormon, and, depending on who you ask, either a bold truth teller or a master manipulator with a God complex. Ruby didn't stumble across her. She sought her out. What started as a counseling relationship quickly turned into a business partnership, and then, some say, a kind of ideological dependency. They launched Connections, a brand, a podcast, a so-called parenting and self-help platform that promoted truth-based living. Sounds harmless at first. Who doesn't want to live in truth, right? But in their world, truth came with a price. And more often than not, that price was paid by the most vulnerable in the room. The kids. Ruby began to use language that hadn't existed in her old videos. She started referring to darkness inside her children. Manipulation. Disobedience that was not just annoying or challenging, but morally corrupt. Wrongdoing wasn't childish anymore. It was evil. Sinful. Something that needed to be corrected with not just discipline, but repentance and surrender. And while Ruby was going down that rabbit hole, Kevin was still in the picture. But just barely. In the summer of 2022, after returning from a Connections retreat, Ruby told Kevin he had to go. It wasn't a fight. It wasn't a blow-up. It was, according to Kevin later, a calm but final declaration. He was the problem. His energy, his presence, his unspoken resistance to their methods, Jody had helped her see it. And if they wanted to save the family, he needed to leave. So he did. July 25th, 2022. Kevin packed his things and moved out. He went to live with his parents, just a few miles away. He left behind his home, his kids, and any kind of parental authority. Ruby didn't just ask for space, she demanded silence. No visits, no phone calls, no checking in. The kids, according to Ruby and Jody, needed to be free of Kevin's influence. They said he was enabling, soft, emotionally unhealthy, that he had a pornography problem he needed to fix on his own. Kevin, likely worn down from years of conflict and believing this was temporary, agreed. He would give them time and money and hope that doing what Ruby asked would eventually bring the family back together. What it really did was leave Ruby alone, fully, completely. With four minor children, no oversight, and no one in the household with the power or permission to challenge her. That was the moment things turned. Not dramatically, not instantly. But over the next year, with Kevin gone and Jody Hildebrandt in, the rules changed. What might have once been labeled as firm parenting started shifting into something much darker. It's hard to pin down exactly what happened and when because Ruby wasn't filming anymore. The YouTube channel had basically died out. But what we do have, what tells the real story, are the journals, notes, court statements, and testimonies from the children. From those we know that punishment started to escalate. Kids were denied food for days at a time. They were forced to perform intense, exhausting manual labor as penance for misbehavior. There were reports of being locked out of the house, made to stand in the hot sun for hours. The most shocking part? Ruby didn't hide it. In her journals, she recorded these lessons in detail, like she was proud of them. Like suffering meant progress. In one entry, she writes about applying a concoction of cayenne pepper and honey to an open wound on her child's hand as discipline. She described it not as pain, but as consequence. It was part of what she believed was casting out the darkness. And in her mind, darkness lived in disobedience, in a child's refusal to comply or show remorse. She believed it had to be exorcised and that she was the only one strong enough to do it. Meanwhile, the children, especially the youngest, were being pulled further away from school, friends, even family. Ruby stopped celebrating holidays. She told the kids Santa wouldn't come because they weren't worthy. She warned them that being numb to consequences meant something was wrong with their souls. And behind all of it was Jody Hildebrandt, the ever-present voice behind the curtain. Whether or not she gave every directive is still being debated. But what's clear is this: she was the one Ruby listened to. And that's not just an opinion. That's documented in texts, in emails, and in Ruby's own words. Jody wasn't just a counselor, she was a gatekeeper. Ruby stayed with her for extended periods, sometimes bringing the kids. Her house in Ivins, Utah, became a second home. Kevin didn't know about the specifics, but neighbors did. One neighbor later reported seeing the kids outside, alone, unsupervised for hours. Another said the youngest children were often left at Jody's house with no adults in sight. Even the Frankie's own daughter, Sherry, who was in college at this point, noticed something was off. She tried reaching out. She confronted her mom. She even started keeping records. But she, too, was shut out. And then, on September 18th, 2022, Sherry did something that probably saved lives. She called the police. She told them she believed her siblings had been left alone at the Springville house for nearly a week while Ruby was away with Jody. Police went out to check. They knocked. No one answered. A neighbor confirmed the kids were likely home but had been told not to open the door for anyone. Officers left a report and called Utah's Division of Child and Family Services. And this is where things get frustrating. DCFS, bound by the state's free-range parenting laws, said there wasn't enough to act on. That, technically, kids of a sufficient age can be left alone as long as their basic needs are met. Never mind that there were reports of hunger, of filth, of isolation. Without physical evidence or clear imminent danger, they said their hands were tied. And so the case was closed. Again, it wasn't the first time. Back in 2020, during the YouTube backlash, viewers had already reported Ruby to the authorities over the infamous beanbag punishment, where her teenage son was made to sleep on the floor for months. DCFS had visited then too. Nothing came of it. So here we were again in 2022. Red flags waving in the wind, people watching, but no one stepping in. From that point on, the spiral continued. Ruby's ideology hardened. Her punishments grew more extreme. Her contact with Jody increased. She pulled further away from extended family. She stopped responding to messages, shut down relationships that questioned her, and dug deeper into the belief that she was the only one capable of raising her children in truth. And Kevin, he stayed away. Not because he didn't care. That's the tragic part. By all accounts, he did. But he believed, truly believed, that giving Ruby space was what she needed. That by respecting the separation she asked for, he was helping her heal. He didn't know what was happening at Jody's house. He didn't see the journals. He didn't hear the screams. All he saw was what Ruby allowed him to see. Silence. And that's the cruel genius of it all. The abuse didn't thrive in chaos. It thrived in control, in secrecy, in the hollowed-out space where a father had once stood. By the time Ruby and Jody were arrested, that damage had already been done. The kids had lived it, survived it. And Kevin, realizing what had happened on his watch, even from the sidelines, was left with a truth that no court could correct. It was all too late. And while the legal system began to turn its gears and Kevin started picking up the pieces, the world turned its attention to the other half of the story. The part that, up to that point, had played out in carefully edited vlogs, smiling thumbnails, and chore charts. The world of eight passengers. Because as shocking as the abuse was, what made it all the more disturbing was how long people had been watching. And how many warning signs had been dismissed as just another quirky Mormon family raising their kids with structure. And that's where this story really began. Before Jody. Before connections. Before the door was shut on Kevin. Back when the Frankies weren't a cautionary tale, they were creators. Family vloggers. Internet famous. And the cracks? They were hiding in plain sight. They looked like any other YouTube family. A little chaotic. A little too polished. Smiling kids. Themed birthdays. Daily routines narrated over acoustic ukulele music. But Eight Passengers wasn't just a family vlog. It was a brand. A business. A digital diary that made Ruby and Kevin Frankie famous for being parents, and eventually infamous for how they did it. The beginning? It was textbook wholesome. Ruby met Kevin in 2000 at Brigham Young University, the way a lot of Utah love stories start. She was studying something family-oriented, of course. He was pursuing engineering. They got engaged after 2 months, married after 4, and had 6 kids in 10 years. They were Mormons living the American family dream, clean-cut, religious, and all in on the nuclear family ideal. Kevin built a steady academic career, eventually becoming a professor of civil engineering. Ruby stayed home with the kids. And at first, that was the dream. They bought a house in Springville, raised their kids on structure, scripture, and an avalanche of expectations. By the time their youngest was out of diapers, Ruby had an idea. It was 2015. YouTube was turning people with ring lights and confidence into celebrities. Mommy bloggers were becoming momfluencers. Ruby saw an opportunity. If people wanted to watch families live their lives, why not offer up hers? That's when Eight Passengers was born. At first, it was simple. Day-in-the-life videos, grocery hauls, back-to-school shopping. Kevin would make appearances in between work and classes. The kids, Sherry, Chad, Abby, Julie, Russell, and Eve, became the stars of a show they didn't audition for but grew up inside of. They vlogged everything, birthdays, sick days, even discipline. Nothing seemed off-limits. And the audience loved it. By 2020, they had 2.5 million subscribers and were pulling in millions of views. Ruby was positioned as a no-nonsense, type A mom who didn't sugarcoat anything. She believed in structure, in obedience, in natural consequences. And a good chunk of her audience, at least at first, admired that. In an age of participation trophies and helicopter parenting, Ruby felt like a throwback to a time when moms meant business. Kevin's role was more in the background, supportive, occasionally goofy, the calm foil to Ruby's rigid routines. He helped with the tech side, managed finances, and kept the whole thing looking just polished enough to feel real. To viewers, they were a team. Traditional, maybe a little strict, but solid. That's the word people kept using, solid. But then the tone started to shift. In 2020, the internet got its first real taste of the darker side of the Frankie household. It came in the form of a casual story shared by Ruby in a vlog about their teenage son, Chad. According to Ruby, Chad had been misbehaving, lying, acting out, and as a consequence, they'd taken away his bedroom. For 7 months, he was sleeping on a beanbag in the living room. Ruby explained it without hesitation. She said he needed to earn back their trust, that this was a natural consequence. Chad, who was in the video, didn't say much. He seemed resigned, maybe embarrassed, maybe just used to it. The internet, however, exploded. Comments flooded in. People accused Ruby and Kevin of abuse, neglect, psychological manipulation. A change.org petition popped up, demanding Child Protective Services investigate the family. It racked up tens of thousands of signatures. But Ruby didn't back down. She said people were misinterpreting things, that what looked like cruelty was actually parenting with love and accountability. And then came the lunch incident. In another video, Ruby shared that her 6-year-old daughter, Eve, had forgotten to pack her lunch for school. The school called home. But Ruby didn't bring her food. She said Eve needed to learn to take responsibility, that going hungry for a day was a lesson she'd remember. Another natural consequence. Another firestorm in the comments. This time, it wasn't just viewers raising concerns. News outlets started picking up the story. Insider, BuzzFeed. Even mainstream networks were paying attention to the growing backlash against the Frankies. But again, Ruby doubled down. and Kevin, when asked, supported her. He told Business Insider that they were being mischaracterized, that the punishment with Chad wasn't about cruelty, it was about a child learning the weight of his actions. He said Chad had made the choice to sleep on the beanbag, that the system of rewards and consequences had been agreed upon, that they loved their children. Maybe they did, but love didn't make the optics better, and it certainly didn't silence the growing chorus of viewers and even former fans who felt like something wasn't right. Over time, the channel started to change. The comments were flooded with criticism. The kids seemed less animated, more cautious on camera. Ruby's tone, once firm but warm, grew colder, sharper. She started using language that felt more moralistic, talking about sin, shame, and accountability in ways that didn't sound like parenting. They sounded like judgment. And then, quietly, 8 passengers started slowing down. Uploads dropped off. Ruby stopped filming daily routines. The channel became quieter. And in 2021, a new chapter began. Not on YouTube, but off camera, in podcasts and coaching seminars under a new brand, Connections. This wasn't parenting advice anymore. This was spiritual ideology dressed up as personal development. And the YouTube audience, by then already fractured, mostly disappeared. The fans who stayed either bought into the shift or were watching in morbid fascination as things got stranger. At the same time, something else was happening behind the scenes. The Frankie family, once so close-knit, at least online, was fracturing. Sherry, the oldest daughter, had begun distancing herself. She stopped appearing in videos. Then she unfollowed her mom on social media. Eventually, she began posting veiled warnings. Photos of herself with captions like, "Finally safe," or "Protect your peace." It was subtle at first, then less so. Ruby's siblings, several of whom had their own online platforms, also began to quietly cut ties. They stopped collaborating, stopped mentioning each other, stopped defending Ruby when the backlash came. The once proud family image was crumbling, not with a scandal, but with silence. And silence is louder than you think, especially when you've built your identity on being seen. So what does this all tell us? That the signs were there, long before anyone escaped through a window, long before a courtroom and a prison sentence. The Frankie story isn't just about abuse. It's about how easily control can hide behind content, how performative parenting, when rewarded with clicks and revenue, can mutate into something else entirely, something dangerous. They started by sharing their lives, and people watched. They disciplined their kids on camera, and people applauded. They started talking about obedience and sin and darkness, and people listened until they didn't. By the time the YouTube channel went dark, the real damage was already being done offline. Ruby had moved past the comments section, past the backlash, past Kevin. She had found a new belief system, a new mentor, a new mission. But the strange thing about online fame is this: it leaves a record. You can delete videos, close comments, scrub your social media, but the internet remembers. And when everything finally came crashing down in 2023, people went back. They watched the old clips again, and this time they didn't see a quirky mom. They saw warning signs. They saw kids begging for forgiveness for minor mistakes. They saw punishments that didn't fit the crime. They saw a father drifting further into the background. They saw a mother who thought discipline was the same thing as love. And once you see that, you can't unsee it. But here's the real kicker. Ruby wasn't just an influencer. She wasn't just a mom with a camera. She was a reflection of something bigger, a culture that, in some corners, still believes that compliance equals virtue, that obedience is more important than understanding, that children are better seen than heard. And when you reward that belief with attention, with income, with admiration, you feed it. You let it grow until it turns into something you can't control, which is exactly what happened. By the time anyone stepped in, the YouTube lights were off. The kids were off camera. The masks were off. And all that was left was the truth. And now, with Ruby behind bars, Kevin rebuilding, and the kids recovering from what they lived through, one question remains. How did no one stop it sooner?
He was charming, handsome, a devoted husband. a doting father. When his wife died tragically in a freak accident, everyone pitied him. He played the role so well, grieving widower, devastated, single dad, just trying to put the pieces back together. But the thing about perfect men, they're usually hiding something. And this one was hiding everything. The affair, the insurance policy, the other wife in another state who had no idea she was married to a walking crime scene. If she had only subscribed to True Crime Today, Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts, she could have listened to Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi ad-free. And before everyone else, she could have seen through the lies. She could have gotten out while she still had the chance. Instead, she's just another case we'll be covering next week. Don't be her. Subscribe now to True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts.